Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
We're going to get a lot of texts on how many people had fingers reattached.
I'm glad you have the texts to you.
We're going
to
make one request.
No pictures.
Thank you.
No, send pictures.
What?
I'm not opening the texts. You have to deal
right,
with it.
Tweet them at HSimon62. Your lost finger pictures, no. He asked for it.
Tis but a scratch, just a flesh wound.
Oh, somebody sent me a picture on Twitter.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Keep them coming.
HSimon62.
I can't look at the screen now.
You asked for it.
For you. You're tougher
right.
than I am.
And the punishment for you trying to get me to look at those pictures is that you should have to look at those pictures.
But I can't handle this stuff. I'm a much bigger baby than you are. I need a whole bunch of tweets right now to push the picture down on the timeline off the screen. Just tweet me your favorite color. Tweet the answer.
How many fingers you have left.
I really don't like any of you people.
Good.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I want to tell everybody about Jonah Williams. Actually, you brought this up the other day, Jeremy, and I want to pass along some information on him in a second. Happy Monday. Happy Dingus Day. 803-0550 to join us. 888-552-550. I'm trying to think if Brayton can pull this off. See, it's too bad we've had 75 different producers in the 15 years we've been on the air. Someday, I'd like to compile a list of all the rotten things Jeremy has done to me over the years. Tweeting pictures of mangled body parts is just one of the many things on the list.
I didn't do that.
We just had the open.
Other people did.
Well, he encouraged.
No, no, I directed people to do that. I don't know if you follow the news. If you direct people to do that.
You encouraged people. I blame you.
No, if I say do it, it doesn't mean that I did anything.
What is this? If I tell you to jump off the Brooklyn, if your friend jumps off the Brooklyn Bridge, would you do it too? No, you would have to make up your own mind. Someday.
Keep an eye on the news. Let's see a couple examples.
I wanted to tell you about Jonah Williams.
I like Jonah Williams.
So I was reading the
story. He's a student of the game.
That's what I wanted to tell you about.
He has spreadsheets of his own.
That's what I want to tell you about.
Reps against guys. Yeah, go for it.
So there's a piece up. He's an offensive tackle from Alabama and is a guy who's in the mix for first offensive tackle off the board. And coming up at 9:30, I'm looking forward to this, actually. Charlie Potter's going to join us. He covers Alabama football. And, you know, you could make a case for the Bills maybe taking Jonah Williams. Maybe they'd like to get Quinnen Williams. He might not even be on the board at 9. You could talk about Irv Smith Jr., their tight end, as maybe a round 2 guy for them. Sal had Irv Smith Jr. in his last mock to the Bills. They've got 2 running backs who are top prospects in the draft. So we're going to talk about the Bama guys. And, of course, there's that tie-in of Brian Daboll being in Alabama and the Bills offensive coordinator. So there's a piece up at ESPN.com from Jordan Renan. He's the Giants reporter for ESPN.com. And it's a feature about Jonah Williams. And you mentioned this the other day, and I thought it was kind of interesting to read this. Self-described film junkie when he arrived at Alabama on a normal day in Tuscaloosa, I'm reading from the piece, it would not have been uncommon to see Williams toting a notebook that included 3 points of focus for that day's practice. It was part of his routine. He created personalized spreadsheets that detailed each opponent's pass rush preferences. He then turned the data into spider charts, whatever those are, to help decipher information. So what he would do is, the spreadsheet, okay? Every opponent he faced for the past few years at Alabama, he would chart 4 of 5 moves for each opponent. Their bull rush, their spin slash swim moves, their chop, their dip. He would go through their specific pass rush moves, put them in an Excel spreadsheet, see what moves they did, the percentage of each move they used, and how often it won and how often it lost. And basically, he had a scouting report of every opponent, all their moves, how successful each of those moves were, and used this spreadsheet while he played at Alabama. And I don't know, I couldn't tell you if that's commonplace, not commonplace.
Well, it means you're dedicated to your craft.
Right. And the article says that basically, I don't mean to, I guess I'm just trying to say, I don't want to set this guy up like he's, like no one else has done this in the history of college football. But the article portrays him as a guy who looked at his job at Alabama as a full-time job. Like playing offensive tackle at Alabama was a full-time job. And he put in the time and the effort to self-scout and do film work and put together the spreadsheets and come up with all the stuff in addition to, you know, practice and all the other stuff that he had to pay attention to and the weight room and blah, blah, blah. I just thought it was a really intriguing. You're the guy who brought it up first because that work ethic, you know, that's the culture and the guy you want to add to your room. And this is the guy.
But there's something else in there that's not just, you know, whenever it's sometimes maybe just kind of glossed over. Culture, work ethic. What that is working smarter. It's not about, not to say that he's not working hard, mm-hmm. but sometimes for whatever reason, the idea of working smart is belittled because it's not grit. You know, what's his grit rating?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I didn't see the grit
rating. He spends time making spider charts.
Right. What's a spider chart?
You've seen a lot of them. Okay. You see them a lot at the combine, right? TJ Hockenson, they'll have a circle, and then they'll plot where he ranked on the percentile of a 40 time, shuttle time, and it looks like in all 360 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking. I did a spider chart Google search and all these different charts.
And this is where I tell you that spider charts can actually be manipulated by which entry you put next to the other. So you can make it look kind of different.
My head's going to explode.
Anyway, it's nothing important.
So anyway, I just thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, you have a guy who went to that kind of extreme to make himself better and to do that kind of work. You know, you probably wouldn't be surprised to hear a pro player talking about that, right?
Right. I mean,
I guess you might wonder, like, wow, college kid with that initiative to do it all on his own.
Well, it sounds like he wants to be great.
Yeah. So, anyway, if you want to read it, it's at ESPN.com. I bring it up because I think that's a guy who you would put in the mix of players that could be drafted by the Bills at 9. He's an offensive tackle who got a ton of experience. He's graded out really well. He didn't give up any sacks this past season. He only gave up like a handful of pressures and can play both sides, left tackle or right tackle, so there's versatility. I don't know if he can play guard at all. We'll ask Charlie Potter when he's with us at the bottom of the hour, but I just found that kind of interesting.
Yeah.
We've been talking about the draft this morning and a little bit about T.J. Yeldon, who has signed with the Bills today, and what you think, how that impacts LeSean McCoy, Frank Gore, how these guys are going to be used in the Bills offense. But with the draft, we went easy today. You know, it's all week we'll talk about the draft. So today, our web poll, our Twitter topic is basically playing off of Sal's article at WGR550.com. Should the Bills trade up? Should the Bills trade down? Should the Bills stay at 9 when it comes to their first pick in the draft? I'm not for trading up. You brought up the first round pick next year if you have to give that up. Honestly, I wouldn't want to give up anything in the second or third round this year. I need those picks for skill guys because I'm convinced they're going to go with a big dude up front. With their first pick, I need the second and third round picks to get a receiver and a tight end and receiver. I do not want to give those up. I suppose you could trade. No, forget it. No, it's too complicated. Yes, don't trade up. You'll get a good player.
What were you going to suggest?
No, I was trying to think if they could trade up and then still find another way to get other picks back that you lost when trading up. It's too complicated. Screw it. Just either stay at 9 or trade down. No trading up. Done. Look, Brandon Bean said it, and he's right. He's pretty confident they'll get a good player at 9. Someone on the board is going to be good and handle a need, right? Whether it's an offensive lineman, whether it's a pass rusher, an edge guy, a defensive tackle. If they love the tight end, Hockenson, and they value him at 9, there will be a good player there who will also handle a need spot for the Bills. So they don't need to trade up. They can stay right where they are.
I reserve judgment until, again, if you are 17th and a player that you have ranked 4th is still sitting there at 11, to me that's a trade up.
Mm-hmm.
When you're at 9,
how high, right?
Like how much higher do you have to go? Now, this is
if
one thing
the,
about
if the guy who's second on your board falls or first. Like, and let's say you had Bosa first, and all of a sudden he slips.
I simultaneously think the draft is really important and also well overblown. At least a lot of the chatter, like as we get up to it, right? The Bills have said, "Oh, they're doing a bunch of mock drafts."
Right. Yeah. Bean has their
and
has
I,
them
and
do
I,
their own mock draft.
I get
draft.
That, sure, but you really don't have to. You have to come up with a list of 9 players you want. 9. That's it. You're gonna get one.
Yeah.
You know, if you go into a fantasy football draft, you can do mock drafts all you want. But what your goal is if you're drafting six, is to say, all right, who are the six? If I'm drafting second, who are the two? I only need to know who the six best players, the nine best players. If you draft the Giants are drafting sixth and 17th, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Come up with a list of the best six. Come up with a list of the best 17.
Right.
And come out with two of those.
Well, I mean, unless being they go deeper, obviously. Well, first they do anyway. It's their job. But they go deeper in case they do want to trade down. What if they're thinking of dropping to 15 or whatever? Okay, so
okay,
how deep are they going?
But in that scenario, you don't have a list of nine then.
No, you have a longer list.
No, if you're going to trade down,
your list
of players you want at nine would be
what's left?
Four players long. Right. I only want four guys out of these top, and none of them are there, I'll trade down.
I'm going back, yeah.
Or actually maybe I have that backwards. Maybe you have a list of the 14 players you're willing to take at nine. And you get to nine and say,
yeah, well, wouldn't that be it more likely?
It's one of the two.
I think because like when he talked about it last week, when Bean met the media and he brought up the idea, he was asked about the concept of trading out of nine, trading down. And I thought he said something about, well, it depends. Like you'd have to have five. I think he used the numbers like five to seven guys on the board. You'd have to know what's left, where you're trading down. Like if there's one guy left on your board worthy of taking, you wouldn't necessarily want to trade down. You don't want to screw yourself out of the player you want. If there's a whole bunch of guys on your board, yes, trade down.
Have you ever been in any fantasy draft? It's the exact same
thing. I auto pick.
It's I realize it. It's actual people and actual assets. It is not different. It is not different than a fantasy draft. You look at your value chart and you say, I've got six players I'd like to get. If I can move down five spots and pick up an asset, then I'll do that. So that's what I mean. I get the mindset. You know, you're not reinventing the wheel here when you're talking about why you would trade down. You would trade down for two reasons. One, you think there is a group of players you can get a little further down. Two, no one at this spot really moves your needle, and somebody else has moved, so you take that asset, and then, you know, let's say you trade down from 9 to 21. Now, you might not have identified 12 players that are worth it, but you might say, oh, let's get down to 21 and then reevaluate. Again, if you have a board, and this is the big thing about this, you have a board. You can auto pick.
Yeah. Well, that's why.
I would
auto pick, but that's just me.
You go to the board. I was happy to hear Bean say about the board, that basically he can trump it.
Right.
He can say, all right, this is the board says, I'm doing this. Like, because that indicates, for better or for worse, that he has the, whatever. You say best player available, draft for need. You can toss all these terms out there. But that he has the, the authority. He puts the faith in himself, again, for better or for worse, to say, I'm not here to auto pick. I'm here to get the guys that I want on this team. And trying to put a number on a guy. This guy we have is a 9.1. This guy's a 9.2.
Right. So let's say.
When you're forecasting 10-year football careers, it's definitely an inexact science.
Well, that's why I thought, you know, the whole thing about drafting for need, drafting, you know, taking the best player available. They do draft for need. We brought up Josh Allen the other day. That was drafting for need. Honestly, you make the case for Tremaine Edmonds was drafting for need. I mean, they might have looked at it and thought, hey, you know, we had this guy graded a lot higher, and look, no one's drafted him yet. Or they could have said, you know what we really need? A middle linebacker. Hey, guess who's still on the board? Tremaine Edmonds. Let's call and go get him. That was not, I don't think they're sitting in the room going, the 12th guy on our board is still up there, fellas. They looked at it and thought, ooh, middle linebacker, hole on our roster, really talented player, let's go up and get him. So you do, you make moves for need. I think with Brandon Bean, that's why I said, I think at nine, it's kind of a moot point because there will be a player of need that is their best player available. You know, it's not like unless the eight picks are gone, the Bills are on the clock, and they look at their big board and the ninth player is a quarterback. I mean, they're obviously not going to draft him. They're going to get a guy who maybe this is where Bean says, maybe the ninth guy is an offensive tackle and he says, nope, I want a pass rusher here. And the pass rusher we're going to take is really not that far behind on our board than the guy who's on there right now, the offensive tackle. We need a pass rusher. And Bean trumps everything and says, okay, we're not taking this guy. We're going with the pass rusher. That's why the whole best player available stuff to me, I don't mean to say it's baloney. I don't mean to be disrespectful. But you're always looking to fill spots on your roster. You know, that's how it works. You're trying, what do we need? Hey, an offensive lineman. who's the best lineman on the board? It's probably not, you're not taking a guy who would say would be a stretch, would be a second round pick. They're going to take a player who's going to fill a need position for this club. And pass rusher would be a need. Even with all the offensive linemen, would you say you were looking again? Six guys they signed, right? Six offensive linemen they signed. You can still make a case that they might be looking for an offensive tackle with the first pick.
It's right. It's worth pointing out, every player they draft doesn't make the team. And the same is true of free agency. Every player you sign doesn't have to make the team.
And these guys, outside of Morris, well, I guess Nisecki got, what, $10 million, 2 years, whatever he got? The rest of these guys are all kind of a mere pittance in terms of contracts. They're short-term deals. They're not a lot of money. It's not like they're really wrapped into any of these guys financially that you'd say, well, that was a big signing. There's no way they're a whole, I keep saying, they're a whole bunch of throw-them-in-the-hat guys. And maybe some starters emerge from that. Or, again, maybe the Bills think that there's a starting offensive lineman that they love with the ninth pick overall in the draft.
Story up today at thefinsider.com, Dolphins stuff, that the Dolphins have shown, according to Peter King, no team has done more research on Josh Rosen than Miami. That's according to Peter King. Best case, a third-round pick for your franchise quarterback. The worst is a third-rounder for essentially a one-year rental. I don't know why it would be a one-year rental. He's under contract.
They're calling Rosen a one-year? Well, because they're anticipating that they're going to take the quarterback in the 2020 draft.
Right.
And that guy takes over. He's the starter.
How about Josh Rosen's career? Drafted by Arizona, they pick a quarterback. Traded to Miami, they pick a quarterback. Yeah. Just keep kicking down the line.
You're in the wrong spot at the wrong time.
If you go from Arizona to then Miami, you go from the team that finished in last, which had very little help, to Miami, who was tanking.
Right. Good luck.
It's not too good for your career.
No.
That's a tough one. At least Josh Allen and Sam Darnold both have teams that have decided, let's completely build around this player in every possible way.
Well, that's the thing. I think that would be frustrating if you're Rosen, if that actually played out that way. If you're Rosen, you'd be frustrated because you'd feel you're a caretaker. You know, you're the stopgap guy. You know, you're holding down the spot. I don't know why AJ McCarron popped into my head, but you're holding down the spot until the Dolphins take a quarterback with the first overall pick or wherever the heck they are in the 2020 draft. And from Rosen's standpoint, that would be tough. You would just wonder, okay, what happens to my career now? I'm here for a year and then I'm a backup. I'm here for a year and then are the Dolphins trading me? What value does he have at that point, by the way? It's tough. It would be a tough situation for him to be in. I'd feel bad for him because I think he would know he's just not long for the world of starting quarterback unless the kid they draft just isn't ready. And they say, Josh is our guy until the 2020 pick is ready to play. Tough spot to be in.
Yeah.
It would be fun. It would be funny that three of those quarterbacks in that class end up in this division if Rosen goes to Miami. And then New England can trade for
Mason Rudolph.
There you go. I was trying to think. Oklahoma State guy. Yeah. I was drawing a blank. Mason Rudolph, right. Then all four quarterbacks. Nah, forget it. Anyway.
But it is a good point about the draft. You are at the mercy of a lot of things that are out of your control. You might go to a team that is poorly run. You might go to a team that's great and wants to sit you for a while. You know, there's a new podcast out called Sports Wars I was listening to. One of the first stories is about Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, how Rodgers thought he was going to go to the 49ers first overall. And then
This was the whole
Smith.
Grudge he held with McCarthy.
Yep. And then he comes to Green Bay, and he and Brett Favre never get along.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Favre flat out said, it's not in my contract to help him get any better.
That's nice.
Right, exactly.
Good teammate.
Exactly. So, hey, whatever. It's competition, and Rodgers has had his detractors over the years, but at the end of the day, if you're good enough to get it done, you win that. He eventually wins the battle with Mike McCarthy. Yeah. That's one thing about it. You know, if you have a good quarterback, think about the Packers here. If you have a good to great quarterback who makes plays like Rodgers does off script so often, it can make you think that Mike McCarthy is a good coach. He might have been a bad coach this entire time, and we're about to find out. Or maybe we find out that he was good, and the guy that they hired instead, which is Matt LaFleur. We'll see if Matt LaFleur's up to it. But what if Rodgers all of a sudden busts out and has a 47-touchdown season with 5,000 yards? There's going to be a whole lot of, oh, wow, maybe they should have moved on to McCarthy a lot sooner.
I was just never impressed with him. I never liked his his coaching style. I thought he was too conservative. I just always wondered about – I'm not that I watched a ton of Packers football. Typically, the most I would have seen of them is playoff games. And I just thought he was a guy who just – his game management was questionable. I just never really looked at him as a guy who knew what he was doing. It more so felt like they were winning because of Rodgers, and they were winning – in spite of the fact that Mike McCarthy was their head coach. If he would have taken the Jets job, I would have been very happy with that, because I just don't think he's a good coach. 803-0550 to join us this morning. We'll take your thoughts on the draft. 888-552-550. And we've been talking about whether they should trade up, trade down, stay at 9, and whatever else you want to bring up with the draft. That's fine. We'll be doing draft talk all week.
When we come in next Monday, it'll be with a fully finished draft and – off of episode 3 of Game of Thrones. Next week's Game of Thrones is going to be legit. 2 weeks of setup. Last night was good.
It's bad.
Let me tell you.
Couldn't even tell you.
People are going to be between Avengers coming out this weekend and the episode of Game of Thrones that they've got on deck, look out.
I've yet to see episode 2. I'm looking forward to watching
it. It was good
that
last
tonight.
Night. It was fine. It's good. But next
I'm an outsider.
Sunday.
You guys talk. I just have no idea what Game of Thrones and no
put it this way. It'd be thing. Like last night was
don't ruin it for Brayton.
No, no. I'm making a comparison here.
Okay.
Last night would have been Ravens Steelers. That's fine.
Okay. But
next week you're
setting up
Patriots Chiefs.
Oh.
It's just it's going to go down. Yeah,
and this is the final season of Game of Thrones?
This is episode 3 of the final season.
How many
season.
Episodes are they having a year?
Depends on the year. I think this one only has six,
this one
seven,
only
or eight.
Six.
Oh, really?
Six.
That's fast. Yeah. So you'll be halfway through.
But they
through
are going to get longer and longer from
now. Yeah, the last three episodes are going to be like near an hour and a half long each.
You guys going to go through withdrawal when this thing is over?
Maybe.
No. Find something
you'll be
else.
All right. Get to the next show to binge watch.
There's supposed to be some sort of spin-offs or sequels or something like that to the show anyway. So maybe
someday,
it'll be interesting.
Someday. I feel like, it's just chuck it up to the number of things that I don't get involved in.
You'll never watch it.
No?
No.
Okay. Well, at least we know if this.
Don't even feel bad. You'll
take your
you'll
advice.
Just never watch it.
Thank you. And you don't think any lesser of me than. Well,
no.
That wouldn't be possible.
Not
actually.
At all. Okay. Not at all.
803-0550 to join us, 888-550-2550, and we'll talk draft with you. It is Monday. Actually, it doesn't even matter if it's Monday. You can start any day this way. Yeah, start your day the Crosby's way. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Visit your locally owned Crosby's and warm up your morning with a made-to-order breakfast sandwich, premium Arabica bean coffee, and a hash brown. You can do all that for just $4.59. The convenience store with freshly prepared food is Crosby's. When we get back, more NFL draft talk. Maybe the Bills will take one of the guys from Alabama. There are a number of candidates available for draft from the Crimson Tide, and we'll break down that group. When we continue, Charlie Potter will join us. He covers Alabama football for 24/7 Sports. That's next, WGR. We're talking NFL draft with you today. 803-0550 to join us. 888-552-550. Make sure you vote in our web poll, WGR550.com, about what the Bills should do in the first round. Trade up, trade down, stay at 9. I was going to include pass on the pick, but I didn't think it would get that many votes.
Vikings did that once, right?
Yes. Wasn't there a second team? No? I thought there was another instance where a team
no, I think the Vikings,
didn't get the card up in time,
they,
maybe?
They missed their pick.
Yeah. Right.
The 7th overall pick, they were unable to complete a proposed trade. What year? 2003.
There's a big debate in the Bills room. Bean and McDermott are yelling at each other, and they don't get the card up in time.
So, in a frenzied flurry in the minutes immediately following, Jacksonville choosing 8 overall, ran up and made a pick. Carolina jumped in and made a pick. Minnesota finally got to pick at number 9.
How did they not pick before Carolina? Like, wouldn't they have just had their card ready to go as soon as...
They did not. While on the clock, the Vikings were discussing trades with Baltimore, Jacksonville, and New England. Minnesota officials finally settled on Baltimore's proposal, would have permitted Baltimore... Wow, how about this? The league changes. Baltimore would have moved up and taken Byron Leftwich. That's who Baltimore wanted.
Oh, wow.
And when the deal didn't get completed, Jacksonville jumped up and took Byron Leftwich.
And then Baltimore ends up.
Ooh, let me. I'm gonna have to go. I'm gonna have to go find that draft. So Leftwich goes 8th. seventh, rather.
Yep, and then Baltimore picks. And
then Carolina jumps and then, up and, then and takes Minnesota. Jordan Gross.
Yep.
And then Minnesota takes Kevin Williams, who was fine.
Yeah.
Right?
But who did Baltimore? Because they were going to take Leftwich. Interesting. All right.
Hold on. Let me find out. I'm just going to get you who Baltimore took that year.
Yep.
In Baltimore, 2003, they end up taking in the 2003 draft. They wanted to move up and take Byron Leftwich. Instead, they stayed at 10 and took Terrell Suggs.
Ah, you're kidding me. Wow. Can you imagine how that changes things? If he doesn't play for them and they get Byron Leftwich?
So what happens? Instead, a deal did not go through, but what happens? Baltimore gets credit for 15 years for taking a Hall of Famer that they didn't want to take.
Did they say Suggs was the top guy on their board after that draft?
Probably.
Even though they were trying to get up for Byron Leftwich?
They were trying to get up and get Leftwich, and they couldn't.
That's funny.
And who's their starting quarterback at that time?
This is pre-Flacco, obviously.
So instead of taking Leftwich 10th, they take Suggs 10th. Or instead of trading up for Leftwich, they take Suggs, and then at 19, they take Kyle Bowler.
Yikes. That didn't work out so
much. No, it did not.
Well, not that Leftwich would have been any great shakes either. On our Western Hotline, we're going to talk a little bit about Alabama football. There are a whole bunch of guys, surprise, surprise, that didn't get drafted off of the Crimson Tide, but a number of the guys I would think are in the mix for what for a Bills pick. So we're joined by Charlie Potter. Charlie is staff writer for BamaOnline.com and 247sports.com. Jonah Williams, Quinnen Williams, Irv Smith Jr., and then two running backs, Josh Jacobs and Damian Harris. That's a lot of ground to cover. Charlie, it's Howard and Jeremy. Thanks for coming on with us this morning. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Let me start with Jonah Williams. Again, you can make a case for either of the Williams guys for the Bills, but let's start with Jonah Williams. Charlie, we were just talking about a story we read about this guy, his spreadsheets and everything he was doing, developing like his own scouting report on pass rushers he was going to face during his career at Alabama. It sounds like this is a very detail-oriented, very conscientious individual.
Yeah, he is. Jonah, just from a media perspective, was probably one of the most interesting guys to cover on the team, just because he was always giving insightful answers about opponents and what he does, on and off the field, whether it's film study or just his technique and things. And basically, Jonah's just a big football nerd when you really break it down, and that's a good thing. He loves the game. He loves the ins and outs of the game. Some of the things I think other people maybe find a little boring, but Jonah lives for that. Not only is he really big on film study, he's big in the weight room. He's obviously a great player in his own right, starting 3 years at Alabama, coming in as a true freshman, starting at right tackle and then moving over to the left tackle. I know a lot of people have made a lot about his arm length, but I think Jonah's going to be fine wherever he ends up in the draft, wherever he ends up position-wise. He's a guy that knows what to do, has played at a very high level, and I think he's a guy that's going to have a really long career because of it.
So he started as a true freshman?
Yeah, he did. He kind of followed that trend that Cam Robinson said. Some other guys at Alabama have done that. But yeah, he came in as an early enrollee with Jalen Hurts and started right away. And outside of, I think he had an injury in the 2018 National Championship game against Georgia. He didn't play the second half, but Jonah didn't really have any injury issues, and he started every game. He moved over to left tackle after Cam Robinson got drafted in the first round, and now he's going to follow in his footsteps again and be a first-round draft pick.
Hey, Charlie, in terms of the strengths of his game, pass pro, run blocker, is he good at both? Was he better maybe at one more than the other in his time at Alabama?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that he's better at either one. I think Jonah's a great tackle. If I were to lean somewhere, I might lean pass pro just because I feel like that takes more technique. And like we've been talking about, that's kind of Jonah's MO. You kind of see a lot of those grinders that are better at run blocking, and Jonah's a good run blocker as well. But I just think that fits more of what he does best, studying the game, knowing where to be and things like that. You can watch a lot of film because there's a lot of film on Jonah, and you're not going to see him mess up a lot. I know people point to the Clemson game and maybe say he didn't have a great game, this national championship game last year, but he's going against some guys that are going to be picked in the first round, and I think if you go back and really watch it, just assignment-wise, which that's like we said, with technique and how he studies and what he knows what he's doing. You know, Jonah doesn't really mess up that in that regard. And I think he might have had one bad play. The rest, you know, he's in position. He knows where to be. And so I think pass pro, I'd probably give a slight edge to that in terms of which one he's better at.
With Quinnen Williams, it's entirely possible that he's not even on the board at 9 when the Bills pick. But if he is, how would you describe his career at Alabama and what he does, what he would bring from the defensive tackle spot?
Yeah, just in terms of ascension and kind of you know, stepping into the spotlight, it's the complete polar opposite of Jonah. You know, Quinnen Williams is a redshirt sophomore this past year. He redshirted his first year at Alabama. He was a reserve 2 years ago. You know, and by reserve, I mean he saw the field a little bit. And then, you know, this offseason with De'Ron Payne going to the NFL, Alabama had a hole to fill at the nose tackle position. And even going back to the spring of last year, I don't think many people thought that Quinnen Williams was going to be the permanent answer there just because he was kind of smaller. He doesn't fit that prototypical nose tackle that Alabama's had in the past. Guys like Marshall Darius, those bigger bodies, A'shaun Robinson, Jaren Reed have played that. You know, Quinnen's a little bit smaller, but, man, whenever he stepped on the field, you know, he was just special. He was hard to block. And, you know, like I mentioned how Jonah's really great with the media. I think Jonah had the best way of describing Quinnen's game. He called him a 300-pound bar of soap because he's just so hard to get your hands on. He's in the backfield before you know it. So, you know, Quinnen had a great year. I don't think a lot of people saw this coming, but I think if you look at it from an individual season standpoint, you can look back at a lot of defensive linemen over the course of Nick Saban's time at Alabama. They've been All-Americans, first-round draft picks. I think just from a one-year perspective, Quinnen Williams might have had the best year out of any of them. So, yeah, I don't know if he's going to be on the board there at number 9, but I guess one can hope.
Charlie, with his usage, was he strictly over the center?
No, they moved him around. Okay. But, you know, you had Isaiah Bugs and Raekwon Davis who are more, you know, defensive end types. So, and the way that, you know, teams were bringing double teams and he was still getting the backfield. I don't think Alabama really cared where he was lined up. But yeah, he manned the nose tackle position. They didn't really have that big body even as a reserve. They had, you know, a couple of older guys, maybe a guy that stepped in there off the bench in a rotational role every now and then. But you know, they kind of left that up to Quinnen. And yeah, I mean, for a guy that isn't that big just in terms of a nose tackle or your traditional nose tackle, you know, he ate space, he took on blocks, and then, you know, he kind of got off of those blocks and got to the backfield. So that's mainly where he played. But, yeah, he's not afraid to move around. They're not afraid to move him around. He did a little bit of that.
I mentioned, you know, those aren't the only guys I want to ask you about. I wanted to ask you about Irv Smith Jr. because that's an area, I think, still of need for the Bills. Maybe that's a guy who's on the board in round 2. So if you could break his game down, Charlie, and I want you to include blocking, because the Bills put a lot of stock and want their tight ends to be really good in terms of blockers, not just pass catchers. So how does this guy stack up?
Yeah, I mean, just from a pass catching standpoint, you know, Irv kind of had probably the best season for a tight end in Alabama history. And you go back and Alabama's had some good tight ends. They haven't used them a lot since Nick Saban's been head coach. You look at a guy like O.J. Howard, who was a first-round draft pick, and you know, Irv's stats just blew OJ's out of the water. But to be a tight end in Alabama, you have to block. It's kind of like the same with a running back. You can't be able to, you're not going to be on the field if you can't go out there and pass protect. And Irv did a good job of that. I think you know, that's one of the more underappreciated aspects of Irv's game, is that he's willing to put his hand in the dirt and take on blocks. And he did a good job of that. Obviously, he was the pass catching tight end in this offense. Hale Hinches, who was a senior and had played all 4 years, was more of their you know, blocking tight end. But you know, as the H in this offense, you know, he still had to do you know, some inline blocking. And I don't really remember a moment where you go back and be like, oh man, you know, Irv missed a block. He was always doing his assignment and things like that. And I think he's sound in that aspect. I do think that Irv is one of the better, you know, pass catching tight ends in this draft. He runs crisp routes. He knows what to do. They moved him out wide as a receiver in a lot of sets last year. But when asked to, you know, Irv got the job done as a blocker, and I think he's going to be successful if that's the next level.
Not O.J. Howard level.
I mean,
at least coming out of Bama, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could be a first-round draft pick. in the later portions of the first round, but he doesn't have that elite athleticism like OJ. I mean, Irv is a talented guy. He has an NFL background. His dad played in the league as a tight end. I think he can have or do that job for a long time. Just watching OJ for 4 years and seeing how underutilized he was and seeing what he's doing in the NFL, I don't want to put that on his shoulders just yet. I do think that he can be successful and be a starter. Just early in the second round, maybe late in the first round is where I think he could go. But you never know with these drafts. And I don't want to put those expectations on him from OJ just because, like I said, I kind of hold OJ in a higher regard just because of the freak that he is. He looks like, I mean, when the dude came out of Alabama, he looked like, some kind of statue in Rome. But he just wasn't utilized as much as Irv was. I think that's an advantage that Irv has. He has all that film to put out there for people. So we'll see. I think he can be like OJ, but I don't want to say he's OJ-like right now.
Last thing, the running backs, and I'm just curious because, the Bills, now they just signed T.J. Yeldon today. Who knows, maybe they'd still be looking to take a running back. With Jacobs and Harris, though, where are they slotted? If the Bills were to draft a running back, probably wouldn't be until day three. Where are these guys slotted?
Yeah, a lot of people have said they're the first two, backs on the board. I think Josh Jacobs is going to be the first running back taken. I don't think it's going to be as high as we've seen some running backs go in recent years. I think he's kind of the mid to late first round pick, and there's a lot of teams that are picking back there that could use a running back. I've always said that a team like either Kansas City or Philadelphia, Josh Jacobs would thrive in those offenses. But he's a guy that he doesn't have a lot of tread on his tires. He's going to do everything you ask him to, whether it's pass protect, catch the ball in the backfield. Obviously, he can run the ball. We've seen what he's done there. He's willing to play special teams. Josh Jacobs will do whatever you ask, and he's going to do it at a very high level. He's a very versatile player, and I think he's going to have a great career in the NFL. Damien Harris, he has a little bit more tread on those tires. He's contributed all 4 years. He was at Alabama, and he's kind of had a heavy workload, not so much as a Derrick Henry or guys like that, even a T.J. Yeldon coming out of Alabama, but he's kind of been the starter the last couple of years. He got overshadowed a little bit by Josh Jacobs, who they utilized and leaned on a little bit more toward the end of the season. But Damien is that same guy. He'll do whatever he needs to do. He's good at pass protecting and Burton Burns, and then the guys that followed after Burton as running backs coach. That was very important for them to get on the field, as they had to be able to block, to catch the football, and do everything that was necessary of them. And Damien's a guy that's going to represent the team well. He's very well spoken. I think he's a guy that's going to be an analyst someday, probably on the SEC Network or wherever he wants to be. But I think they're kind of projected to be the first and second running backs taken. Okay. You never know how it'll end up. But I don't know if – I definitely know Josh Jacobs won't last to day three. I don't know if Damien will last either, with some people considered him the number two back in this draft.
Charlie, thanks for all the information. Appreciate you giving us some of your time this morning, and say hi to Nate Oates for us.
We'll do, guys. Thanks for having me.
There's Charlie Potter. He is joining us from BamaOnline.com, staff writer for BamaOnline.com, covers Alabama football and Alabama basketball. We'll have coverage of the draft as well Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday night, 8 o'clock, Murph and Steve Tasker. Friday, and that's the day two, would be rounds two and three. Our coverage will be hosted by Nate Geary and Joe DiBiase, 7 p.m. And then Saturday, rounds 4 through 7, coverage starts at 11 a.m. Again, it'll be Nate and Joe. Sal will be out at the stadium all 3 days and be involved in the draft coverage as well. Coverage of the NFL Draft, WGR, presented by Fiegel & Carr, your border attorneys. Brought to you by Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women, and by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case.
Breaking sports news airs first here, guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550, 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
No kidding. Breer was 8 years. That's the anniversary of the Breer? Today is what? How many years? 13 years.
Years ago, which means I have to call my friends and wish them a happy anniversary because I was at a wedding during that game.
What a great game! I was in the press box that night.
13.
That was so much fun. Place was nuts. We could have played Rick's Call. That's a long time, 13 years.
I can't even process that. 13 years.
Didn't he have, warning. Right? 12, Go find the Briere. You got 2 minutes, Brayton. Find the Briere game-winning goal against the Flyers in double overtime.
That's what that was. Oh, you mean the
audio? The audio clip. Rick's call.
Oh, Rick's call.
Yeah.
On at least his
13th shot. On his 12th shot, 13th shot, right? Wasn't that in Rick's call? He mentioned like which shot of the game it was for him.
I forget. On at least his 13th? I think he said on his 13th shot 13th of the night. Shot.
Okay. Anyway.
The game was on OLN.
Oh, God, yeah.
The Outdoor Life
was
Network.
That before or after Versus?
I was derelict in my duties as a groomsman in a wedding, watching in the bar that was attached to the wedding hall. I missed almost the entire wedding.
That's okay. The game was really good.
In fact, since it went to double overtime, the bus started taking the wedding party back to the cottage. We're out in like Cape Cod.
Yeah.
And I stayed back.
To watch the game.
To watch the end of the game.
Good move on your part.
That's the Umberger hit is in that game.
Oh, that was in that game?
The Sabres had a 2-0 lead and gave it up 2-2 and then won double overtime.
Here's the call.
Back it comes, kept in by Hesh. Penalty coming up to Philadelphia.
Thirteen-year anniversary. Happy 13-year anniversary, just Danny Briere.
Read my article.
Woo!
Feel my pain.
I did read your article.
Your pain, all of our pain.
I did, yes.
Do it.
Now I'm going to think about that game all day. I think about the Sabres all day, all the time. It's terrible.
Instigators coming
up. I'm waiting for Game of Thrones for a sweet release from thinking about the Sabres nonstop.
Happy Dingus Day. Instigators next. See you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.